you'll take your Bibles and turn with me to 1 John chapter 4. Verse 7. It's interesting in the whole realm of Christmas stories that usually we find ourselves in Luke's Gospel as we hear Mary's story told, or Matthew's Gospel as we hear of Joseph and the wise men. But when we come to John's Gospel, John begins at a much earlier point. John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And John continues through that, omits the entire birth narrative and goes straight to John the Baptist. But we find here in John's letter to the churches a little tiny piece of the Christmas story, and I want to read it to you today. 1 John chapter 4, verse 7. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God, and everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. This is how God showed His love among us. He sent His one and only Son into the world that we might live through Him. This is love, not that we love God, but that He loved us and sent His Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and His love is made complete in us. When was the last time that you thought about being loved and what it does to you to be loved? Not to be in love, but to actually be loved, to have that reciprocal affection, that assurance from the object of your affection that they love you. I remember back, I guess we're going back 9 years now, when Michelle and I first began our relationship. It was early in July, and I had made the terrible gaffe of sending her away to Seattle with the words, you know, if you live closer, maybe we could make something of this, but I just don't think long-distance relationships work. And I think it was about a week of moping around, shuffling around, and finally my sister said, why don't you write her a letter? And so began our letter-writing relationship, and I began to write a letter, and she responded to the letter, and I sent another, and she sent another, and by the end of July, I think more than 24 letters had gone back and forth. And all through the summer, as I went from summer camp to summer camp, the letters kept on coming. In fact, it was the bright spot of my day when mail call came, and the guys had a lot of fun at my expense locking me out of the office while they read supposed parts of her letters, which they had just made up. And then school began, and still the letters came back and forth. 3,000 kilometers separated us. And I was at Bible college for my last year, and Bible colleges, as you may know, are veritable breeding grounds of couples and marriage. And so I am surrounded by couples, and I am all by myself with this so-called girlfriend that nobody has seen or knows exists, but I get letters from her every day. And finally, in the midst of all of this, I began to be a little concerned. I'd never really had a girlfriend before, and I thought, what if she is not thinking the same as I'm thinking? What if she thinks that I'm just a nice guy and we're just writing a letter every day for the sake of our literary skills? And so I got on the phone and I called her up. We figured out the time zone change, and I said with a trepidatious voice, would it be okay for me to refer to you as my girlfriend? Okay. Now, some of you who are a little bit more wise in the ways of the world are laughing at me for my naivety. But Michelle on the other end of the line said, yes, that would be great. You could call me your girlfriend. Oh, good. I feel great, you know. I went down there. I could have done anything. I probably could have flown to school with my own feet. Because all of a sudden I knew that my lover reciprocated, that here was somebody who was saying, yes, yes, you are the one, I love you. And the funny thing was, Michelle came down the stairs. I asked her permission before I shared this story. Came down the stairs, bubbling over, and said, he's my boyfriend. And her dad, whose mailbox had been perpetually filled with mail since the early parts of July, just looked down from his newspaper and said, what was he before? Love has become a greatly devalued term in our world today. Would you agree with that? In some ways, it almost seems to have been drained of any real meaning. We see love thrown all over the place. That term love is used to define almost anything. And if I love everything, do I really love anything at all? If I love my wife and my kids, my minivan and my home, and I love my favorite TV show, and I love pizza, what does the word really mean? When I was in high school, there was a song on the radio, and I tried to remember all the lyrics, but I just couldn't. But it was this, saying you love me is not the words I wanted you to say. Those of you who are in my generation would know that particular song. And it goes on to say, more than words is what I want, to show me how you feel. Sounds like a really nice song. Had a really catchy tune, too. Some of you would be more familiar maybe with a similar theme by Elvis when he sings, my love can't wait. And both songs are equating love with physical, sexual gratification and saying, this is love. This is how you demonstrate love to me. And is it any wonder that our world is very confused about what love really is? I was determined as a teenager and then as a young man to never use the term love in any sort of context where I couldn't be absolutely certain that that was what I felt. That probably added to my strangeness and my inability to figure out whether or not Michelle was my girlfriend. But I was absolutely determined that I would never kiss a girl that I did not love, and I would never tell a girl that I loved her if I was not very certain, at least on my side, that I would continue to love her for the rest of my life. And so it was that Michelle and I continued that letter-writing relationship and even became boyfriend and girlfriend long before I ever came to the point where I was ready to say, I love you. And it was only a short number of weeks after I was able to say, absolutely, I love you, and on my part, that means I'm committed to you, that I proposed to her. Any real love, I believe, has to do with being willing to give us to somebody else. I want to examine just for a few moments some of those higher forms of love. Perhaps one of the best known, most talked about, most frequent is the idea of marital love or romantic love. This is an earned love. Understand what I'm saying. Marital love, romantic love, is an earned love. I did not spring from my cradle with this idea in my mind that there was a girl out there named Michelle Tillery that I had to find. Neither did you. There was a certain point in your life where you saw your spouse or the object of your affection and something in you clinched. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was her appearance. Maybe it was his sense of humor. Maybe it was character. Maybe it was a personality trait that drew you to that person. You know, you start looking at couples and you sometimes scratch your head and wonder, I wonder what in the world started that. But it is earned love. That's not to devalue it. It's incredibly valuable. It's incredibly powerful. But it is earned. It is something that is in Michelle that has drawn out my affection and has settled itself into love. And it is the same in every case where two people who before were complete strangers become something more. It is an earned love. It is a form of affection, a form of attraction. There's another sort of love, a love that is different from marital love. We could talk about parental love. And just like you might sometimes look at a couple and say, I wonder how that goes there, sometimes we look at kids and say, boy, only a mother could love them. You should have seen my kids on their 7,000-kilometer trip once in a while as I'm wearing my big earplugs and driving, going another 300 miles and then we'll stop. But we love our children. We love our children even when they do not obey us. I often tell my kids, I love you. Tabitha always wants to know, Daddy, do you love me when I'm bad? Yes, Daddy, I love you when you're bad. Do you love me more when I'm good? No. I like you more when you're good, but I always love you all the time. We love our children when they cost us money. Dad's gone out, but he can tell you stories about two or three phone calls. Dad, you know the minivan? It's kind of wrecked right now. Dad continued to love me, even though it cost him money. Even when it spoils all the plans that we set aside for our children or for ourselves, we continue to love our children. Well, why? Well, we could spend the whole morning talking about why we love our children. I think to some level, there's a certain level of responsibility. We've brought them into the world. We can't just unleash them onto it. We need to train them, to prepare them, to equip them. And along that way, we love them. We see ourselves reflected in them. We see our hopes and our dreams beginning to play out for them. We desire the best for them. It's a responsible, affectionate love, and it has great value. Finally, I want to talk about one other sort of love, and that's that love that we share between friends. Now, ladies, you probably get to the point where you have friends that you might even say, you know, I love you. Fellas, you probably find that a little harder to say. But all the same, we have these relationships with these people that we call friends, and generally, they come because we share something in common. We enjoy some sort of common ground, and we enjoy that relationship. Even in hard times, we get pleasure from being there for our friends and having our friends be there for us. It's a reciprocal sort of love that goes back and forth, and sometimes when those shared values change, sometimes friends drift apart. But it's a valuable sort of love. The Apostle John had an awful lot to say about love. In fact, he claims that love is the defining characteristic of both God and the children of God, Christians. Look for just a moment at 1 John 4, verse 7 and 8 again. John writes and says, "Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love." Now, this is one of those passages that can get a little bit confusing. We've just talked about all sorts of love and love that people tend to share for one another. So I'm going to ask you for just a moment to hold this as a big question mark in your mind and say, what is John talking about when he says God is love? What is he talking about when he says that everyone who loves is born of God and knows God, and whoever does not love does not know God? I want you to just hold it in your mind as a question. What sort of love is this? Because it seems to me that if this was one of the loves that we have just described, it would define every person. Who is there that does not know any sort of romantic love? What parent does not love their children? I'm sure there are some. I think we see the results of that in our society today. Who is there that does not have that reciprocal friendship sort of love? And so that would make John's statement meaningless when he says whoever does not love does not know God, unless there is a love which we have yet to define. And yet, unless there is a love that goes beyond this. So I want you to just hold this as a question mark in your mind for a moment. What sort of love is John talking about when he says God is love, and everyone who has this sort of love is born of God, and the one who does not have this love does not even know God. I want you to go to another page in your mind for a moment. Keep that held here in stasis, and imagine for a moment that you were a new immigrant to Canada, that you had never been here before, that you had never celebrated or seen Christmas before, and you had no friends who understood Christmas. You don't yet understand the English language well enough to read anything about Christmas. You are simply going to observe with your eyes what you see, and you're going to come to a conclusion about what in the world this Christmas season is all about. What kind of ideas would you come up with? What kind of thoughts would come as you wandered around your community and watched your television set? Clearly, it's a time of great indebtedness. It seems people are expected to spend not only the money they have in their bank account, but everything they can possibly find in their credit cards to buy as many gifts as they can. And attached to that is the idea that anybody who works in retail is expected to spend Christmas working overtime so that they can keep those stores open longer hours. It's a season of wanton gluttony, where party after party after party stuff you full of turkey and fill you up with wine. There are all sorts of strange deities or small godlike creatures that people seem to worship, such as this guy in the red suit with the white beard that children line up in the mall to see. And with him are all of his little reindeer. And then surrounding him are all those little elves in green tights. For those of you who haven't been to the Dickens craft show, I was there yesterday and saw Dan Avey, the drop and turn director, and Jeff McLeod. And I said, you know, next year we need to dress you guys up like Santa and one of his elves. And Jeff didn't know if that was a great idea or not. But there's all these sort of strange things that are happening. It's a time when people just completely disregard their electricity bill. Forget about environmentalism. We just crank up the lights and we cut down the trees. You know, for 1 month, the tree huggers seem to just disappear and say, go ahead, cut them down and light them up. And finally, this immigrant would probably be completely baffled because it seems that while we are willing to spend tremendous amounts of time and money and even stress and strain celebrating Christmas, a lot of people don't want to celebrate Christmas at all. They want to get rid of that name Christmas. It's not properly named. That name might be offensive. Let's call it the holidays. So we have this confusing mess, and this is what we live in. And as much as we might like to try to sort through it, we live with it every year. And we love it. I have nothing against Santa and his elves, his eight reindeer, or nine, I guess if you count Rudolph. My kids set up their Christmas tree yesterday. Tabitha was so excited this morning that Elijah hadn't seen it that she actually put an extension cord on it and dragged it into his room so the baby could see it. We have all these confusing ideas that circle around Christmas. But I wonder, does it ever feel to you that Christmas is a time when we're trying as hard as we can to recapture some magical feeling to have, but find instead that we are rushed and hurried and stressed and bothered and come to January ultimately disappointed? Take a moment to reflect on this. If I asked you to write a one-page essay analyzing whether your life has been shaped more by the threat of God's law or by the wonder of God's grace, what would you write? If I were to hand out papers right now, suspend the sermon for half an hour and let you write that paper, I know you probably had enough papers to write. What would you write? Has your life been more shaped by the fear of God's law or by the wonder of God's grace? This very question was asked at an evangelical Bible college just a few years ago. Do you know 90% of those students responded that their lives had been more deeply impacted by the thought of God's displeasure and wrath than by the thought of God's unending love? I I want to give you this statement, and if you walk out of here with only one thing left in your mind, let it be this: Christianity is not about following the rules. Christianity is not about following the rules. Religion is about rules and ritual. Christianity is about relationship. It is not about following the rules. And we learn that from John as he talks about this first Christmas. That little bit he tells in Stasis, you can pull that out now. What sort of love is John talking about? John tells us about Christmas right here. 1 John chapter 4, verse 9. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might have life through him. This verse and the one that follows it define the love that God has and the love that subsequently comes to his children. Listen to it. What is God doing? God is giving of himself. This is the love that God showed among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. Sounds like Nathan's having a good time back there. God sent the greatest gift that has ever been given. Did not come in Tiffany blue, was not wrapped in some gold cellophane with a red ribbon on top. It was wrapped in swaddling clothes and lying in a manger. God gave. Why? So that we might live through him. This sort of love only belongs to God and his children. It is a love that seeks the best for the object of its love. It is a completely selfless love that gives itself without any sort of expectation or requirement. When the angels appeared to the shepherds, they did not appear with a list of rules saying, this is what you must do because God has given you a gift of love. They announced good news, peace for men, God's favor towards you. Christmas is God loving us for our sake, for our good, God loving us for our benefit. Christmas is about sending life in the form of love. When we look back at this passage, it says, let us love one another, for love comes from God. This is the sort of love that has been spoken of. It is not natural to humans. Everyone who knows, who loves, has been born of God and knows God, and whoever does not love does not know God. Nobody in this world naturally does this. In fact, in our current culture, we've gone so far as to even avoid some of the lower forms of love because they may become too much of a hassle to get out of when we decide we don't love anymore, when it no longer benefits us and we want to escape it. Marriage is on the outs. Friendships are not necessarily as tight as they once were because we have that desire to only find the things that benefit us, the things that suit us, the things that make us happy. And God loves not for his own sake, but for our sake. He says, I love you for your own sake, for your own good, for your own benefit. Jesus would later demonstrate this love through his life and then apply that truth to loving our brother. Look around you. To loving our neighbor, even when they leave their Christmas tree on the front boulevard for the entire winter. To loving our enemy for their own good, for their own sake. And finally, he would demonstrate what he's talking about by going to the cross. I want to encourage you to do two things this week in preparation for Christmas. The first is to go away this week and concern yourself not with God's law, with God's rules, or with God's judgment. Those things have been never capable of bringing about the righteous life that God desires. That was a failure. God knew it would be we cannot become righteous by following God's law, because we cannot hope to fulfill it. Do not go away and concern yourself with God's law, but go away and concern yourself with God's love. I want you to reflect this week on the fact that God has loved you for your own good. It is a law that stimulates obedience and righteousness. You'll permit me one more story before I get to this second closing point. Last night, as I was trying to get Sam to bed, I found myself thinking about this. We have some funny ideas about God and His love. We live in a democratic society where we have an awful lot of control over our lives. And we sometimes think that we can pick and choose with God and say, I want this much God and no more. And God says, no. He says, I'm sovereign. You don't understand sovereignty the way the people who read these letters did. They understood what it was to have a sovereign king who was absolute in power and authority. And maybe the best way to describe this is to describe my situation with my children, and especially with Sam and Yacht. Jamal's 2-year-olds, I'm a 6'3", 250-pound man that, if you don't know me, seems scary. This is proven over and over again in the supermarkets and shopping malls where you wave at a 2-year-old and they begin to cry. To a 2-year-old, I am an absolute authority with the power to back it up. Does not matter how much you may want to fight it, how much you struggle against it. I am far too big and far too powerful for you to have your own way or to say no to me and stomp your little foot and march away. It doesn't work that way. Sammy knows that. But to the typical 2-year-old, I suppose we can even call Nathan up there, I won't do it. I'm a stranger and I'm frightened. But to Sam, it's an entirely different thing. And all Sam wanted me to do last night was to snuggle with him. Why? Because he's not afraid of me. Because he knows that I love him. And so even though I am, to a 2-year-old, a giant with unmatched strength and power, they are not afraid of me because they know that I love them. And in the same way, God is to us, the adult, to our 2-year-old, absolute power, absolute authority. To those who do not know Him, perhaps terrifying, but to those who are aware of the fact that He has loved us, He is the greatest being that we could ever want to know. I want to encourage you to go this week and find yourself thinking not on God's law, but on God's love, which leads you to obedience. Secondly, I want you to consider what it means for us to love others with this sort of love. Not for what I might get out of it, not for the benefit that comes to me, but to love them for their own good, to love them selflessly without asking the questions, what do I get? That might mean loving a difficult relative this season just for their own sake. That might mean giving up something that we want so that we can give to someone else. But I believe that if we do that, we will uncover just a little bit of what Christmas is all about. We will remember again what selfless love is all about. Together as we sing.